So we do a meditation on rejoicing. This is one of the most pleasant, that's probably one of the only really pleasant meditations. And the Lama said this is the most easy practice. You can even do that lying down. When you lie in your bed and you're a bit sick, you can think, but at least other people are healthy. If everybody would be sick, it would be a disaster. I wouldn't have access to the doctor. If you need to go to hospital, if everybody is sick, everybody would be running to hospital. I wouldn't have access. You know, this is how you start thinking. And then your misery is not so bad anymore. If you can do Tonglen, then you do start to do Tonglen, and then your sickness is a good thing. But we're not going that far. We do it the easy way. So that you, why we do these things with people that you find it easy to rejoice about, so that we get in contact with how it feels. Hey, man, that feels really good. So that we have interest, and then we see that this feeling is created by thought. Nothing else but that, you know. And then your negative mind or your anger and all this doesn't have that much chance to manifest. Because these are two minds that are totally contradictory, you know. If you are joyful, you cannot get angry. It's impossible. And we all know that. We have experienced that. We have much more patience when we're joyful. But joy has causes. And we'll learn about them in the meditation now. Okay. So sit with the straight back, best as you can. Relax, but stay awake. This is what we need in the meditation, a mind that is relaxed but awake and interested. And I know it's a bit difficult after a long day, but wake yourself up by thinking, this could be my last meditation. I have no guarantee that I will still be alive after dinner. Yeah, it's fact. Causes for death are many. Body is very fragile. How do I want to spend my last meditation? Daydreaming about about projects that I've already thought about them 100 times? Or do I want to be present? Here, awake, fully there, to experience how much energy that gives me. Making effort to be present gives you energy, it doesn't make you tired. And then you already know, first you connect with the body, you feel the connection the body makes to the ground or to the chair. Knowing that fully directly, body is sitting, already that gives some kind of a pleasant, open feeling. Knowing what is going on in the moment, because nothing else is going on for you in the moment but that. Okay, so I try to see if that is true, that joy has causes. So one of the causes for joy is being non-harming, ethical conduct. So just remember moments where you could have cheated, lied, whatever, but you decided not to do. You remember the situation, what kind of feeling does it produce in your mind? And remember, pure ethical conduct, not ethical conduct because you were forced to do it or because you wanted something from the other person. a totally voluntarily decision, no, I'm not going to do that negative act. If you remember that, how does it make you feel now? And now you look at the opposite. Remember a negative action. Be, was it justified, not justified, whatever. An action out of anger, out of greed, jealousy, pride, whatever. How does it make you feel, the memory of that? And just see the difference. Expose the mind to that. Let the mind see and understand without words. Another cause for joy is generosity. And it's not always money. It can be time. You didn't really feel like going to see that person, but you pushed yourself and you thought, okay, I'm going. You gave your time to that person. But without any expectations, again, the moment you have expectations, there's no joy. You recognize the suffering or the loneliness of the person. You didn't feel like talking to the person, but you opened up and you did. What does that memory in your mind? What kind of feelings does it bring up? Or money. You decided, instead of spending it for yourself, you're going to give it to a beneficial project. How does it make you feel? Or skills. Somebody needed your help. Maybe you're a lawyer and you gave legal advice for free. Maybe you're a computer expert and you helped somebody with the telephone or with the computer. Voluntarily, not because you were forced to. Then remember moments where you said, no, I don't have money, time, I don't want to share my skills. How does that make you feel? I'm not saying you don't have a right to say no, I'm just inviting you to check how it makes you feel, as opposed to when you say yes and you give. And don't go into shame or guilt or whatever, we're just looking. Another cause for joy is loving kindness. So for that you need somebody else. So think about somebody that you like very much. You imagine calling that person, asking how are you, and the person says, wow, today I'm really well. How does that make you feel? Look in your heart. Check the chest. Is there space? Or is it tense? How does it make you feel when you hear that somebody is really well and successful that you dislike? Anger, hate, jealousy. Where's the space gone now? Don't run away from it, look at it. Again, don't feel ashamed or guilty, is no point. It's just ego play. If there's absolutely no difference, then it's not the right person. Somebody that you dislike is very successful and very liked. How do you feel? Just look. And who suffers? And what does it take away from the other person? So very gently try to open up. Keep that person. It's not your biggest enemy, I hope. Just somebody you dislike. Where you find it difficult to open your heart, to rejoice when the person is well. And we're going to try to find reasons so that the heart opens. One of the reasons is that person is just like me, wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. Check what happens when you think like that. See the resistance and don't go against the resistance, just notice it. It's normal for us to have these feelings. That's why we suffer. Keep thinking that. That person is just like me, wanting happiness and not wanting to be harmed and not wanting to suffer. Or imagine the person, how the person was as a baby. Vulnerable, weak, just like every baby. Other reasons, if there's dislike and even hatred in my heart, I say things that afterwards I feel ashamed about. I become a person that I don't really want to be. I look really ugly when I'm angry, and I cannot enjoy anything. If something softens or opens up, it's great. If nothing opens up, doesn't matter. Just keep going along these thoughts. Or find other thoughts that would help you to open your heart. You could, for example, think, okay, I dislike the person, but may my dislike not harm that person? May I be protected from harming that person? I be able to dissolve that dislike. May I be happy. May I be well. I deserve it. Because that will make me the person that I want to be. And sometimes even see the resistance to that. How harsh we are with ourselves. May I be happy. May I be well. May I be at peace with whatever is. May I be capable to deal with difficult situations. May I be happy. May I be well. Then gratitude is a source or a cause for joy. And you can think of all the people who allow you to love them. Because without them, you would have no loving kindness and no compassion and no deep connections, which are basic needs of human beings for happiness. You are not a saint, and you know that. Yet other people allow you to like them, to love them, to be close to them. That's wonderful. And then I know that your lives are difficult, but still, you know, it could be worse. So you think about all the good things that we have access to without feeling guilty that you don't deserve it. You do deserve it. It's your own mind stream who has created this situation through karmic actions in the past. You have access to medical help when you're sick. Dentists. People who know how to make glasses and hearing aids so you can still hear and see as you get older. You can still read. If you break bones, they can be fixed. Now, I'm going to stop now. Find yourself other reasons to be happy in your life. Don't look at the negative side. Don't go, yes, but. Doesn't help. Your education. Your passport that opens doors to other countries. And anything else you find that makes you relaxed and grateful, think about that. And then check, how does it make you feel? Gratitude, a cause for joy. Just this fact that we have a human mind that can use the cortex and not just the reptile brain. common sense. We can turn every situation around without turning the situation itself around, depending on how we look at it. Animals can't do that, but humans can, and you're human. Bodhicitta is a cause for joy, making your life really meaningful. I am going to develop my good heart and my mind, wisdom and compassion, in order to be of benefit to all sentient beings. Even you have not been to university, even you're very ugly, too fat or too thin, old or young, everybody can develop that heart of awakening. What can you think of that would be more meaningful and more noble? So this is for the Buddhists now. Remember these moments when you sit in meditation and think about that, and all of a sudden something opens and you feel the courageous of this heart of enlightenment or awakening. A meaningful life. Not depending on outside things. And we end the meditation as we did, rejoicing that 40 people are sitting here, being interested in developing a good heart. And instead of being a nuisance and a problem in society, to be of benefit and to be of help. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche, usually when it's that meditation on rejoicing, he goes, "How wonderful this is! How wonderful this is! 40 people who want to develop a good heart. And you are one of them. Isn't that great?" Now when you hear the gong, it's okay to be happy, but don't be happy that the meditation is finished, because you develop a habit of always having to wait for something to finish. Be happy that you did it. That's different. I got the courage and the patience together to come here and endure the pains of meditation. How wonderful this is. How wonderful this is. Because it's not easy. We could all be at the beach, or in the movies, or eating glida, or sleeping, or whatever. But we're here. That shows we have courage and endurance. And that's great. Okay. So, do you see some benefit in doing that? Yeah, eh? It's better than Prozac, actually. And it definitely works better than Glida. It lasts longer, and you always have access to it, and it doesn't cost anything. On top of it, doesn't pollute the planet, you know? So, okay, let's see. You say don't be cynical because it's not good, but when you talk, you are cynical, it's true, yourself, but somehow you are doing it in a good way. Thank you. So is cynical in a certain way is a good thing? I think so. You know, I forgot to say, humor is a source of joy also. To be able to laugh about your own shortcomings. Because as I say, if I point out things, most of the things it's we are doing. Like I'm talking to myself, you know. I'm talking to myself to bring these difficult things up, but in a light way. So then it's fine, you know. I mean, that's okay. But I mean cynical in a way, somebody has a good opinion about somebody and then you totally destroy it by, like with the ladies at the cashier yesterday, okay? In that way, it's not helping. It's really not helping. But I'm cynical about my own actions or reactions, you know? And sometimes also about yours, because when it's Israeli stuff, of course, then I'm excluded. And Sabine also. We are two excluded, so that's for you. But since it makes you laugh, then when there's humor, there's a wordplay also in German who comes from a psychologist who was very close to Carl Gustav Jung. His name is Karl Schwery. And I know him. He's a wonderful person also. And so he says, like, how does it go? You know, when you do awareness meditation, you have to let things be. You know, and in German is you become gelassen, meaning you leave it. Gelassen. And then you get gelassenheit, you get like the noun of that. And with this gelassenheit, with being able to let things be, a certain lightness comes in, which is Leichtigkeit. And then with this lightness, humor comes very easy. But if you don't go these steps, if you cannot let things be the way they are, you will not get that lightness of the humor. So it goes in these steps. It was very nice how he kind of described it, how humor is developed. And humor is like, is I'm not laughing about others, I'm kind of laughing at my own reactions. So that's not being cynical, that's being humorous in a way, you know. Is that answering your question? Okay, thank you. If you have a family member that is living with you and you love him, but he is so negative and he has bad karma, how can you practice love and patience to him? Yes, true. It's very bitter, isn't it? It really hurts. When you see how people again and again and again go into that negative loop and just stay there and there's no way you can get them out of it, how can you help them? By not getting angry at them. That's one thing, because it will not make them happier. And dedicating. You know, you dedicate your practice to their well-being. And by just being a good example and being open and accepting, I think. It's very painful. It's very, very painful to see, you know, I would have exactly the right tools to this person, but they're not taking it. It happens very often. It happens very often. But don't give up hope, you know. I mean, be a good example, be patient, be there, listen to them. And that puts imprints on their minds also, that at one point, maybe it will make them be more open to that. And dedicate. Whenever you finish your meditation, all the positive energy, or you practice, all the positive energy that comes from my practice, I dedicate for the happiness and well-being of the other. And always, what we just did with ourselves, may you be happy, may you be well, may you find what you're looking for, always. If you really practice patience, and if you understand what patience is, it makes you gentle and open and patient. Kind of, the person is grumpy, it's fine, it's all right. Try not to, you see, if it would be a stranger, you would have much better tools to work with it. If it's somebody that is in the family, we're too close, there's a lot of attachment, and we put that responsibility on our own shoulders that we should be able to help that person. You cannot. Let go, again, this is contradicting, I know, but let go of wanting to help them. Just do whatever you think in every moment what is of benefit. And that can be one day or one minute, it can be this, by saying, come on, stop it. And the other minute it can be, yes, you're right, it's really terrible. I don't know. You see, this is why you have to develop your own mind, because the more your heart is open, the more you will know what to do at what moment. I can not give you ready-made recipes how to deal with difficult people. It's impossible. Okay? But dedicate. Because that shows you, you know, very often we're so interested in these people because it's uncomfortable to live with them. So again, it comes down to me. I don't want to live with such a person. It's too difficult for me, if we're honest. Yeah? I would rather have a happy father, mother, brother, sister, husband, children, or whatever. So let go, try to let go of that part. You know? Not because the more you are attached, the more you get upset when your methods don't work, the more pressure you put on that other person, which you should not. But you should have an open heart, and if you can do something, by all means do. But, you know, I mean, all these things that we're trying to do for them, how many times have they worked? And still we're using the same things, and the same thing, and the same, and all that we see, it never works. So why not give up? But not giving up, leaving them alone. But, you see, always wanting to help somebody, especially somebody who's close to you, there's a message in there. I don't like you the way you are. And very often it's packaged into, but it's because I love this person. Also, of course you love this person because you have interest, but try to see how much self-interest is in there. Would you be as interested in the well-being of that person if it would be your neighbor? Most probably not. Don't know if that. And if person who asked that question, is that okay? Okay. Oh, this one. Yep. Also very difficult. What would be the best way to deal with ants in the kitchen for someone who is not willing to harm them? This may seem a silly question. No, it is not. It is not at all. It's not a silly question. What to deal with ants? You can tell them to please go, otherwise I will have to kill you. And sometimes, I don't know how, but it works. You can write, somebody said when they had rats, they would write letters to them and say, look, this is a really dangerous situation here. You don't leave, you get killed. You can at least try, okay? It's not a miracle thing, it doesn't work all the time. Then if you need to kill them, because sometimes we do, because, you know, Buddhism doesn't say, oh, let them take over, then you move out of the house and they're living in the house happily ever after. They you know, they increase, and then the whole city is full of them and that's it. That's not a skillful way. If you need to kill them, try to do it yourself in the most human way possible, and then do rituals for them to have a good rebirth. Because then it's almost beneficial that you kill the ants. Don't give the responsibility to somebody else if you have the skills. Don't go, well, like, you know, rent or kill, they're called, I think. In Switzerland, they're called rent or kill. As a rent a killer, these people with the insects, yeah. And we have this problem in Bern in the center. We have mold. And there's little tiny bugs who kind of, when there's not enough mold in the wall, when it gets warm and dry, they come out. And they live maybe one day and then they die, and then the dead bodies kind of, but they're really tiny, lie around. I try to explain to the people who come to the center, look, for the moment, I'm not doing anything about them because it's good for them to be in a gompa. You know, it's good for them to die here because then I do practices for them, yeah? But then the house is not mine. We're renting it. So I did have to tell the house owner that, you know, and so they have to do something with the wall, because spraying there in that thing is not getting rid of them, because as long as there's mold, then there will be these bugs. And he is interested in not having bugs, so maybe at one point he will kind of do something that so that we have a dry wall, which will be good for us also. For the ants or for any other things, try to see the cause. You know, what is the cause for them to be there? Maybe you can do something with the cause, and then, you know. But, or you have fleas, you know, in your robes or in your clothes, and you say, well, you know, I'm a Buddhist, I'm not going to kill them. And then they multiply, and in the end they get so many, you have to kill a lot of them. But do it in the most humane way, and not immediately. Try to think of something else, what you could do. And maybe, sometimes people have, you know, like ants, I think also cinnamon they don't like. So you could put cinnamon sticks, you can try that. Some ants, they don't care at all, you know. They don't know that they should go. They don't know that they should like dislike the cinnamon.
I tried the cinnamon. I tried telling them that they have to go because otherwise.
Yeah.
I tried everything.
Yeah. So then,
but
you know.
Everywhere.
Yeah. So then you have to do because they will increase actually.
Maybe
you know.
Sugary stuff.
I don't know how to say it in English, but I'll say. It in
yeah.
English.
Okay. Okay, so you're the person with the ants. Okay, so she has the recipe. When we start to talk again, then you can exchange. Or look, this is the person with the ants. If you do have a thing to go away, then when the course is finished, please go and tell her your recipe. Not now, we're still in silence, but maybe we can help. Yeah, I know, this is a big problem. It's not a silly question. Because, you know, the more you are concerned about these seemingly insignificant things, the more you are concerned about big beings also. So it shows that you do understand, you know. Okay. But, yeah, I don't know. Or keep telling them that they should go. That I saw a young girl in Tahiti also, telling, she could hardly talk, but she had understood that. I think we had talked about it, and she's telling the ants, you have to go away, otherwise Kampa, we're killing you. And they left. So maybe you're not the right person to tell them. Maybe you have to find another person. Regarding the fight-flight issue, often I feel that I flight with friends or acquaintances, not talking about bullies here, as a means to avoid conflict, yeah? I used to think of that as a weakness, but perhaps it is skillful. I'd like to hear your opinion, thank you. I don't know, you know, this is, again, you can only find out yourself why you are not saying anything. Because one can use the medicine of the Dharma as poison. Like, you know, you're too lazy to do something, say, well, like the Tibetan, everything is impermanent, so who cares? Everything is empty, so who cares? And that's using the Dharma like poison. And you think you're practicing patience, but you're not really, yeah? So you can only find out yourself what it is, yeah? I mean, this kind of flight is, you go away, you can still be in contact with the people not fighting back. And then it's like, you know, when you don't meet aggression with aggression, it's like hitting into the void. And all of a sudden, it actually stops. But that's difficult because you will have to bear the blows at the beginning without hitting back. You know, maybe the people that you flight, whether you fight with them or whether you flight or you feast, they will not change. So see what's most beneficial for you. Do you want to go into a fight so that you feel good about yourself? How do you feel after the fight? And when you choose the flight thing, you know, then be happy that nobody got hurt, as I said. Be happy that you didn't say unpleasant words that can be used against you afterwards. Because that's what we do. When we fight with these people that don't like us, we exaggerate what we're saying. We're not saying the full truth. They, most of the time, afterwards use it against you. If you don't say anything, they have no tools to attack you further.
So I have to ask, do you not believe in... I'm not talking about anger and fighting with the other person, but telling him, do you not believe that
I believe that I have no right to make other people change. I believe I have the right to change my own mind. And if other people want to change, that is their business. That's my belief. But you don't have to accept it. Okay?
No, I'm just asking
This is my practice. I'm not telling you should practice the same thing. And you're not going to convince me that I should change my mind.
No, I'm asking about you. If if I believe people can influence me, change me, so it has to be also the other way.
If somebody comes to ask me,
because he said people,
how can I change? How can I transform? Yeah, of course I tell them what they could do. But if they don't ask, you know. I just had a situation where I tried to, somebody who is really disliked by everybody, is a nun also, she behaves in a really difficult way, and I tried to help her. She got terribly angry, and she came to tell me, you don't tell me what you do, because you feel, you make me feel very uneasy, and then I create negative karma. I thought, she's right, you know. She's not asking me. And she's not breaking the vows, it's no big thing, it's her behavior that is really disruptive, and she doesn't see what she's doing. So she came to tell me that I shouldn't tell her what to do, because otherwise she starts to break vows of not following my advice. See what I mean? I thought that is so typical. So because I also thought, who am I? I'm not the Sangha police here. Why do I have to tell her that she is a... You know, she doesn't want to change, because she says, if I'm breaking vows, you can tell me. If I misbehave, that's the way I behave. I'm from Sicily, that's it, blah. So, and somebody who at one point tried to change me, they almost make me give up the Dharma, because I felt so uncomfortable. So I thought, oops. See, this is the nice thing with Dharma people, we say what we feel. Yeah, she gave me her opinion. Stop wanting to change. Because what I'm saying also is, like, if people do not invite you to criticize them, in your criticism, they might not feel your concern and your love. They only see the criticism. And then it's the message, I don't like you the way you are. So we have to learn to really accept them the way they are. And then maybe we can do something. Of course, it would be much easier if we could tell everybody, Shoshana, look, come on, you know, get your act together, and whenever I ask you to lead a meditation, just lead it. But I don't. I have no right. She doesn't want to do it. It's fine, you know. I'm happy for the ones that she leads. I think it's fantastic. Just an example. Do you see what I mean? But this is my opinion, and this is Buddha Dharma. First you change your own mind, and then you're wanting to change the other will come out of compassion and not out of frustration and this and that. But that's not usually what we do. That's not the worldly view, and Buddhism is not the worldly view. And do not try to make it the worldly view. If you want to have the worldly view, you have all the rights to do that. If you want to remain angry, you have all the rights to do that, but you have to bear the consequences. There is no Buddha who is watching. Oh yeah, she really needs to be angry because she needs to. So therefore, no negative karma for her. It's your mind who is creating the karma, not the Buddha. So it's your anger is your responsibility. Your mind is your responsibility. All what the Buddha is doing is giving us the tools, and he does explain, you do this, this happens. You do that, that's the consequence. Finished. So yeah, that's my opinion and my view, but you don't have to accept it. And I will still like you and accept you, even if you have a totally different opinion. That's fine. It's fine with me. You said that spiritual training is for your mind, yeah, only, and no, cannot change or force others. What should you do when you see people who hurt you indirectly due to their behavior? For example, destroying the planet by eating meat. By eating meat and so on. The Karmapa before this Karmapa, 16th, said, you know, I eat meat, but I tell you what, I'd rather be a peaceful eat-meater than a violent vegetarian. That's the answer to that. Many people ask me, why do Tibetans eat meat? Because they like it. But I don't eat meat, only if somebody gives it to me. I don't want to make a problem. Somebody gives me meat, I eat it. I don't make a big thing. I used to be a very militant vegetarian against animal things, this and that. Everybody was making, all my friends, they ate meat in front of me to show me how courageous they are and how they don't care about my opinion. The more I told them not to eat meat, the less they listened to me, you know? What I can do, I can stop eating meat, and that's it. But yeah, if I have the skills to somebody stop eating meat, I would, but I don't, you know. I don't. My choice is I don't eat meat, and that's it. But I like meat also, and I eat it if somebody gives it to me. And when I do fasting, not this time, but like when I'm in Germany, especially when I'm in Munich, and I do Nunes, I dream of sausages, you know? I have the taste of sausage, because whole Munich is full of sausage smell. I have the taste of sausage in my mouth, and then what I do to get rid of it, then I start visualize, I let go of the other visualization, I have a truck come, and all the sausages go in it, and it's been given to the people who want and who need it. Then sometimes I can go back to the mantra, sometimes also not, you know? Or one noon day also, I was planning pizza. Pizza is my thing. I was, you know, noon fasting, not eating, not drinking, like, you know, more than one day, because we do this more than one day. Although the next day you drink and eat a little bit, but then you go back to fasting. I did that for 5.5 months. And so I was from, you know, India, you don't have any good pizzas. But I was doing that in Europe, 8 of them, which is 2 weeks. And I was sitting there, you know, Mani Padme Hum, I was chandrasic practice. And I was thinking, oh, which pizzeria do I go to when this is finished? What pizza shall I eat? And then, you know, the thought comes, how many pizzas did you already eat in your life, you know? Numberless. Did it make you happier right now? I thought, no. Boom, went back to the mantra. But you know, if you let the mind go, it goes into these fantasies, and then you have the lack of it, and this and that. And these stupid pizzas, I mean, it's like the list of different pizzas gets longer, 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 longer. Luckily, I don't eat meat, because at least I only have like 5 choices. Other people have 25 choices, you know. And then I always think, margherita is the best. Why don't you just not even look at the menu and just order margherita? So, yeah, if you get, you know, what we can do, we do our share. We turn off the lights when we go out. We put the plastic bottles in the plastic containers and not there. What we see garbage lying around, instead of thinking, oh, wow, these people are really bad, blah, 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 blah. You know, pick it up, put it in a bin. Okay? But don't do it when they're still there, you know, in a demonstrative way, how wonderful you are and how caring you are about the environment. Do it when they're gone. This self-righteous thing, you know, I never throw anything away. It's out. It's great if you do that. Other people haven't learned it, you know. I'm really happy that this came with my Swiss education, that you don't throw trash out into nature. This is what I learned. I do this automatically. It's not suffering. You go into nature, and there's no bins. You take your garbage back with you. And even if there's bins, you should actually take it back with you, because somebody has to collect this whole thing, you know. But also now young Swiss people is like, oh, wow, we're totally over, isn't it? Young Swiss people, they don't have this kind of education anymore. But we can do our share with this environment thing. Go, you know, take a bike, go by foot, take public transport, all these kind of many things you can do. And then you feel okay. And don't look at others. If you can make them stop, do. Now we go and have dinner. Okay? And we're still in silence. I'm sorry that I went almost 1/4 of an hour over. But I do the rest of the questions after dinner.